Hello, and welcome to episode 162 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Bishop Chris Matthews, of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church, in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Bishop Matthews, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. The first question I'd like to pose to you is, what are you currently doing, or what have you ever done to advance the public interest, and why?
I currently serve on a number of interfaith boards. Mm-hmm. Interfaith Works is probably one of the largest interfaith organizations in Montgomery County, which they're focused on their primary mission of addressing the needs, service needs, and advocacy needs for the poor and homeless in Montgomery County. And I also serve as a member of the Faith Leaders Emergency Response Team, which is headed by Reverend Casey Caseman, who's Ike Leggett's liaison to the faith community.
And for our listeners, Ike Leggett is
the county executive of Montgomery County.
And he's also a previous guest on Public Interest
Podcast.
Yeah,
wonderful man. We'll miss him when his term is up.
So you're an emergency response team. What's an example of a crisis, of an emergency that a faith leader may need to respond to?
Well, two that I've been involved in recently. One was a desecration of the synagogue in the Kentlands, and Rabbi Jacob Blumenthal asked us to respond, and basically we came and met that evening and just provided solidarity. Another one was the apartment building that exploded in the Silver Spring area. Mm-hmm. We were called to respond to provide pastoral support for individuals who were displaced or in the shelter at the time. So those are two situations that I've been actively involved in.
Is it difficult to provide pastoral support to somebody of a different faith?
You have to be sensitive to what their beliefs are. And oftentimes when we get into those situations, we are playing more the role of getting them to professional counselors like the Red Cross, who are also on site, to help them with their dealings. If they want to deal with pastoral-related things, we're certainly available to do that. Mm-hmm. We've been trained to be sensitive to a lot of different faiths, and so we try to keep things relatively general and respond to what they're thinking at the time.
So you mentioned that as bishop, you're the head of a congregation, which is akin in other faiths to a priest or a rabbi, being a bishop in a Church of Latter-day Saints, and you provide pastoral support to a congregation. Can you speak a little bit about what constitutes pastoral support? Is it, why would someone come to you for that? What is your role, and what is the desired outcome?
Yeah. A bishop in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has three primary responsibilities. One is to oversee the welfare resources of the church. The church has a very extensive welfare program in terms of providing food needs as well as a family social services need. There's an employment center. All of these things are in the Washington, D.C. area. So I will address people that may find themselves in need for food support or rent assistance. Mm-hmm. I'm the one that has the responsibility to make sure that those resources are deployed, you know, in accordance with the appropriate use of those things. I'm also responsible for, and the term that we use in the church is the common judge. Mm-hmm. So if there are issues where people are sort of out of having difficult things relating to keeping themselves living in accordance with expectations of church rules, if you will. Mm-hmm. They may come to me, confess sins like a priest, and I will work with them to help them through the repentance process and sort of gain their status or their sense of belonging to the faith community. This is all very, very private, but I'll have people come and confess like you would find in many other denominations. And the other major responsibility is I'm responsible for all of the youth. So those are the three primary responsibilities. The nice thing about the LDS Church, the Mormon Church, is that everybody's a volunteer. So we've got lots of people that are there. I'm not going it alone like happens oftentimes with ministers or rabbis where they've got a really heavy load. I'm not a paid clergyman, but I spend a lot of hours each week working with things. But I've got lots of other people. I've got a council of leaders that also support.
Interesting. So it sounds like you're a social worker and also, to some extent, like a spiritual therapist in a way, providing guidance to leading someone back to the correct path. And then it also seems that the way that the church supports its own community is instead of, obviously, I guess dues would have to keep the lights on and pay, you know, for the building expenses. But it sounds like a lot of it is driven by volunteer work more than by paid staff, and that it sounds like perhaps the funds that people would pay to be members here, it sounds like you give a lot of rental assistance and food and social services, so kind of the funds go towards the mission. Is that a correct recapitulation of
what you're doing? Yeah, I think that's really close, Jordan. There are two sort of what we would call financial obligations, and no one's checking on you, but... We are tithe payers. In other words, we pay 10% of our income. That's an expectation that people do. And they also, we fast once a month and contribute the money saved from fasting for the care and need of the poor.
For how long do you fast?
24 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
And so, and donate that, the money that you save, to the poor.
Right.
Interesting.
And so, that's where the resources for welfare support come from. We're encouraging people not to be too...
You're feeding others by taking food out of your own mouth.
Right, that's what we believe.
In addition to the
sense of sacrifice, yeah.
And so, now, is this happen on a weekend or a weekday? Because you mentioned you've had other jobs. The fasting.
It happens normally on the first Sunday of every month, church-wide.
Really?
Yeah.
The first Sunday. Okay, and then I guess... You are able to eat and the Monday morning, and you have to go to work.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you balance or have been able to balance your career with your responsibilities within the church.
Yeah.
You've been working as a healthcare professional. So on the one hand, you're a bishop, you're a leader in the Mormon faith, but you still have to, you know, feed your family and pay the bills. So you have a career in healthcare. And you've balanced the two. Can you speak a little
right.
bit?
Well, I guess it's easier. I'm addicted to busy,
So
maybe that's it. I think what happens is you grow up in our faith community, you're given a responsibility very young. I mean, I remember speaking in our worship services when I was, 12 years old. And so those opportunities are given to you, and you're given responsibility to function within your age groups to provide leadership. And so you've been taught to use your time in very effective ways. So I don't see it as, you might think that I've got two jobs, and I do, but it's sort of how my life has been. I've sort of gained accustomed to it. The other thing is that there are lots of people carrying a lot of the burden that might fall on a rabbi or a priest or an imam in another faith group, but everybody in our congregation is doing something to support the faith community, whether they're teaching. I've got two counselors that are responsible for a lot of the organizations that I can delegate responsibility to.
It sounds ironic that you don't have paid staff on the one hand, and on the other hand, that everyone in the congregation is paying 10% of their income, which sounds like those amounts would greatly exceed normal dues at a traditional congregation of whatever denomination.
Right.
So it sounds like you're having more revenues than other faiths, but fewer paid staff.
There are no paid staff.
Yeah, no paid staff.
No paid staff. No.
So all the money just goes, you have a budget, and it's just going to mission.
Yeah, it goes to expansion of the church, building temples, building church buildings. It goes to
a lot of capital projects.
Yeah, there's probably two or three chapels built a day in the world someplace.
Oh, it's building a chapel, not necessarily where your congregation, it's not another one in Montgomery County.
No.
It could be in
Yeah, the church.
Zimbabwe or Ukraine.
Very centralized. So the funds that we contribute go to a central account, and we are allocated a budget which is uniform across the world on a per congregant basis to fund the needs of our congregation members. Years ago, there was a time where each congregation had their own budgets. Well, it created sort of a disparate sort of circumstance where if you're in the Potomac congregation where you've got lots of well-to-do people,
right,
they can fund lots of things. But what about those that are in Tuscaloosa, Alabama? They don't have the support they need. So the church sort of leveled the playing field and said, no more budgeting and bringing in private funds to support youth programs. We want you to live within a reasonable budget, and that was allocated on the same basis across the world.
Although the fasting proceeds are kept within the community.
They stay in the community to the point where we cover the needs of our congregation. We are a part of what's called the Seneca, Maryland stake, which is akin to a diocese, so there are 9 congregations. If there are greater needs outside of our congregation, our funds are then exported to other congregations within our stake. If the stake has surpluses, that goes back to the church generally and is allocated wherever in the world that they have a need.
Huh. So interesting. There's multiple tiers.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you a little bit, Chris, and why you've ended up becoming a bishop. I'm sure, what is the size of your congregation?
I have 500 members.
Around 500 members, and of course, many of them are volunteers, but they're not bishops. This
right.
may take more time. So why is it that, I'd like you to speak a little bit, if you have a calling, if you felt something, or why you feel motivated to be a bishop of this congregation, especially given, you know, family responsibilities and your professional responsibilities.
Now, the interesting thing about how that works within our congregation is I don't make those decisions. We feel that when we are actively involved in serving the Lord, then mm-hmm. there's going to be opportunities for us to serve. And so I was called by our stake president, mm-hmm. who had that calling, my calling, approved by the leaders of the church. Mm-hmm.
So your stake president was, the leaders of the church said that you, they identified you in a congregation as a leader.
Yeah, he did, and then it was recommended. So it wasn't something that I aspired to.
Really?
Yeah.
So you didn't seek this out?
No, I didn't.
This wasn't something where you felt a calling from? So did you feel calling? Were you selected by people or by God?
I feel I was selected by God. It was interesting. For about 4 months in advance before I was called, I just had a sense that this might happen.
Hmm.
Because I usually stay in these roles for 5 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that there were some changes that were going to happen. I sensed that this might happen, and I was delighted that would be an opportunity. But it's not something you aspire to. It's a lot of work,
uh-huh.
and there's a lot of things involved. But I'm happy to serve and serve God and serve my community.
So are there former bishops in the congregation?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Many.
So it's like a rotational.
Yeah.
You'll rotate in for 5 to 8 years, and then you'll be replaced by another.
That's right.
Interesting.
So I've been serving for, it'll be 4 years in June, and I'm likely to be released from this calling in the next 2 to 3 years.
And why do you suspect that God selected you to be the bishop here on the one hand? On the second hand, how did the leaders of the church get that message?
Yeah. Well, we believe in revelation and prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are basic tenets of the church.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that our church is led by a living prophet, and the local stake president, who's over the equivalent of a diocese, has the authority to function in response to God's promptings within this geographic area. And I feel very strongly that occurred. And
so why did God select you then?
I think looking back on it, there were some particular things going on within the youth, We have a very diverse congregation. There's a lot of French African members of our congregation. We just had a family move in from Pakistan, which I didn't even know the church had a presence in Pakistan.
Yeah.
But they've been members of the church since 1998 and have since immigrated here. But I found that as I was going through the process of serving, that I had a connection with a number of these young French African young men.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them in particular are now serving as missionaries, one in Texas in a French-speaking mission.
Interesting.
Spanish-speaking mission.
Spanish.
And so he'll come back trilingual, and the other serving in northern Utah, probably one of the few African Americans in the entire county where he's serving, given the nature of those states in the West. But I found a connection. I remember seeing the light of the gospel come on in these young men's eyes when they were 16 years old and then began to prepare themselves to serve the Lord. So I think that was one of the reasons that our paths were converging, and that one of my responsibilities was to prepare these young men to serve God.
Interesting. One thing that I'm interested, if we could just briefly return to,
sure,
is we spoke about the living prophets. And that is of interest to me because many religions have prophets, but not as many religions have living prophets. So is it possible for you to give me an estimate of how many living prophets within the Mormon Church there are today?
Well, we believe that there is one.
Only one.
At this time who speaks on behalf of God for the world, and his name is Thomas Monson. We believe that the church, whose name is sort of linked with its founding, is Joseph Smith,
mm-hmm,
who was called by God to be a prophet, to play a role.
But he's not still alive.
No. He died in 1844. But his role was to restore some of the lost truths,
mm-hmm,
that had been lost during the time of the apostasy, and that there's been a succession of prophets since him.
So if Thomas Monson is the only living prophet, I mean, could you elaborate a little more on how, because remember you said, I might have misheard you,
sure,
that there was some kind of prophet who selected you to be the bishop here?
No, the stake president.
Oh, the president.
Yeah, and then he that gets approval from President Monson and his two counselors, which refer to as the first presidency, so.
It sounds like a big purpose of the church is to spread, as you in your own words, the light of the gospel. Is that true? And I guess what other is the goal to make everybody a Mormon? Or I guess because it seems like you're putting a lot of resources,
yep,
into places that you've never been to help people you've never met.
Right.
Can you elaborate upon the philosophy that drives you to contribute so much of your personal resources to a centralized church in order to ensure that the Mormon word is brought to other parts of the world where you will never go?
Yeah, I think we're followers of Christ, and we feel that one of our obligations is to preach his gospel to people that have never even maybe heard of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much that we want them all to be Mormons, but that we want them to accept the true gospel of Jesus Christ and those teachings that,
mm-hmm,
that we're trying to espouse. We're real believers in the freedom of religion. You know,
mm-hmm,
we claim the right to practice our religion, and we also believe very strongly that other people should be given that same right to practice how, where, or what they may.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't look at other churches as somehow evil or in any way bad. Lots of truth is contained within religions, whether they're Hindu, whether they're Christian, whether they're Jews, whether they're Muslims. But again, we feel ultimately that to have a relationship with Jesus Christ and follow that gospel is what our Heavenly Father would really want us to do. We believe in the notion that all men and women are creations of God.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're all, in a sense, you know, brothers and sisters.
So on a daily basis, it sounds like social work and humanistic type endeavors are quite important to you. Can you speak a little bit about what is driving you as a Mormon, or how you approach the rest of your life as a Mormon?
Well, I'm the product of a social worker mother and a CEO dad.
Okay.
So it's a little schizophrenic, but they both were real believers in serving and providing, particularly for people that were not able to care for themselves or somehow disadvantaged. I remember being taught about lots of different faiths. My favorite book as a kid was called One God. I still have it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother taught us about other faiths, whether they were Christian or non-Christian. So I've always felt a kinship around people of faith. And that drives me. I mean, there's enough hostility, whether that's political or ethnic or whatever, in the world where we need to be finding common ground and not throwing stones at one another. So those have always been important to me, you know, solving social problems. I remember when we eventually ended up in Connecticut when I was in high school, our parents would take us down into the central city of Bridgeport, Connecticut, and we would be reading to young people. They would be reading to us. It was just something that we did. And I think that's a principle that as we are followers of Christ, that's what he would do. That's what we feel we are obligated to do, is make the world a better place.
Interesting. So what else would Jesus Christ have you do? You said that he would have you spread his word. And then he would have you, I guess, help where you're able to. Is there any other guiding precept that, or how would one listening here, if somebody listening wanted to know how to walk in the path of Jesus Christ, how would you instruct such an individual to do that?
Well, as I've studied his life, he certainly prioritized care for the poor and needy. And that's a very big priority for us, whether that's within our own congregation or the humanitarian efforts that we're involved with Catholic Charities or Islamic Charities, mm-hmm. or any of those organizations that have reached beyond ours. So that's a big priority in terms of caring for the poor. Also, I think those who are troubled, have difficulties,
mm-hmm.
Whether they're disabled, whether they have depression, whether there are difficulty, that comes into that ecclesiastical part of my pastoral counseling in terms of helping people. Mm-hmm. I'm not a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
We have family social services that I can refer people to,
mm-hmm.
and we do that. We feel that we're here on earth to improve ourselves, and some people just need a hand up. The picture on the wall over here to my right sort of is indicative of what we feel, that as we're sort of going through life, we're trying to help people that may be disadvantaged to find a better place. Whether it's, I have a friend that works for a major pharmaceutical manufacturer, and he says they get sick of providing these internships for rich, smart kids, and they would like to see kids that are disadvantaged, that are smart,
mm-hmm.
given these opportunities. They don't worry about the rich, smart kids because they're going to find their way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some of these kids that need to be found,
mm-hmm.
and guided to some of these other places. So we think that's what the Savior would want us to do, and that's what he would do.
Have you ever been given a hand up by anyone?
Absolutely. I think I've had mentors all along my life and changed my life path in a lot of ways.
So as we wrap up this podcast, I'd like to ask a final question, which is to suppose that this Sunday you were standing before your congregation, and I'd like you to speak to them about your lifetime in public service and your efforts to walk along the path of Jesus Christ so that you make the world a better place than what you found. If you could explain to them why you've chosen this path of yours, or why God has chosen you to walk down this path, and what do you hope ultimately will be your legacy once you've walked the entirety of that path?
Wow, that's I talk about this a lot to our congregation, and I must say they are involved in those kind of things. They know that I am. I just find it fun. I don't have any problem stopping by another religious building and walk in and introduce myself to the pastor. It's just out there making friends and having other people to play with. So I see service in the community as reaching out beyond your comfort zone and finding new friends to play with. I am absolutely convinced that in my experience in working with rabbis, imams, priests, that working together is the way to get, you know, more accomplished in leveraging your own talents. I enjoy doing it. I've enjoyed doing it my entire life, and I will continue to do that. And I hope that's what people remember me for, is one who's compassionate, who understands that, you know, people are often fearful to express their weaknesses, and that they would be comfortable expressing those things to me. I think oftentimes within our faith, this notion of striving to become better and better and better often makes it difficult for people to talk about their imperfections, because they're supposed to be this way, but in fact we're all imperfect. So what I've tried to create within our congregation is a willingness to speak to one another on that same level of humanity, that we all need a hand up. We all need to be aware of each other, and that we all are here to help each other. And in that sense, we can help each other in a lot of different ways.
And thank you so much for joining us today, Bishop Matthews. That has been Bishop Chris Matthews of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church, who speaks about how we all need a hand up, and his lifetime path of providing strength to the vulnerable in allowing others to understand that we are all imperfect, and that we can all benefit from acknowledging that imperfection and trying to give others a hand up, and that compassion that he brings to his calling of both spreading the, as he describes it, the light of the gospel, and also to spreading that compassion through his vast array of humanistic social justice initiatives. Bishop Matthews is interested in working to help others improve themselves. He finds that walking in the path of Jesus Christ is a path in which he is helping the poor and needy, and he finds immense strength, but also joy, and he has much fun in pursuing the calling of his faith. So, in sum, Bishop Matthews is someone who is able to advance the public interest through his faith, and he construes that interest as one in which we recognize that we are all the children of God, and that we ought to acknowledge our common origins and our common humanity. So, Bishop Matthews, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And this has been episode 162 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. I'd like to remind you to subscribe at publicinterestpodcast.com. Go through the website at www.publicinterestpod.com. Listen on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, Player FM, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. And should you wish to communicate with Bishop Matthews, you can call 240-630-0380, and that message will be conveyed to him. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.